The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We've all been there. You've invested time and money in dancing or football, only for your child to turn around and tell you they don't like it anymore and they don't want to go to that class. So what do you do? What should you do? Should you force them to go or do you let them quit? Claire Crowe is a member of the Psychological Society of Ireland and she's here with me. Hello, Claire. We have all been there, haven't we, with this?
Absolutely.
How many times?
Yes. There isn't a family in Ireland who hasn't had someone sit on the stairs and say, I'm not going. You know, it's so familiar to all of us. And the goal is not to, it's to develop enough ownership that they feel connected to it, you know, that they want to do it for themselves.
It always happens after two or three lessons where you've paid for nine. Mm. You know?
Yeah. So you get that gorgeous peak at the start because they've got new gear, they've got new equipment, it's exciting. And then you're in the lull period, the hard bit where you have to learn the skill. And then, no way. Like people, they want to give up. And, you know, for me, the question there becomes around, like, what are we teaching our kids? So I'm going to depend on their age, but I'm often going to say, let's stick with it. If they're older, I'm going to say, let's stick with it for the season. You know, we've committed to the team because if they're older, they can understand the peer relationships piece. If they're under 10, I'm going to say, actually, you know, we've paid money for the lessons up for six lessons. So we're going to do the six lessons. The only caveat I will give with that is if like there was, you know, a mismatch or bullying or significant stress that I thought actually this is causing more damage. But otherwise, I'm a real believer in resilience comes from overcoming challenges. And one of the challenges is I loved this at the start and now my stuff isn't as shiny anymore and I don't know if I want to do it, but actually we continue through it. And then you get to the end of the season and then you can have that conversation of, well, what do you think now? You know, will we give it another go? Because we're much more open to that conversation than when we've had a chance to build success at it.
Okay, but that means you're going to have to push your child quite significantly if they're telling you, I absolutely hate the guitar. I don't want to do it anymore or whatever the activity is. Yeah. You are going to have to push them then to go in.
Yeah. And it's tough because what we're looking at there is competence. Like anytime you start anything, you're generally crap at it. You know, you don't start the guitar and you're a great musician. You start on the strings and it's tricky.
And it's sore.
Yeah. Or you start swimming and it's cold and it's football and you like the smallies don't know which direction they're going. Everything is hard at the start. So what we want is to look at that idea of competence. Competence is one of the three strategies to get this right. And competence is, I'm good at it, but you don't have that at the start. So if you don't have that, the nice way to look at that is to look at intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. So intrinsic is, I'm really good, I'm going to do it. You don't have that. Then extrinsic is, I'm going to give you something to get over the hard bit. So that works really well in kids under seven. So I was talking to a GA club and they give Freddo bars to every 3 and 4 year old at the end of a session, which sounds a little bit excessive, but it's a great psychology principle because it's giving them the external reward. It's noticing that they don't have the skills, they don't have the competence. So let's build up the reward and then
they bribe
feed
them.
It back.
They bribe them.
But bribes, the bribes work. You know, we're all subject to behaviours and that response where we get rewarded for something works. So don't, you know, sometimes people can be very hard on extrinsic motivation, but it works for a period. And the key then is to fade it out, gradually fade it out. So for this club, by the time you're 5 or 6, you don't get them. So that they, because at 5 or 6, the kids can kick the ball or they can, you know, hurl or whatever it is that they need to do.
So they should have their own motivation then to keep going.
Yeah, exactly. They've built it. So, and then of course, how do we build intrinsic motivation? For that, it's creating an internal monologue. Now, I talk about this a lot, is helping our children to story what's happening for them. So what that would look like is at the end of a match saying, oh, you know, what were you good at today? What did you enjoy today? What was the best bit? What are you getting better at doing? You know, start those conversations so the kid is beginning to go, oh yeah, actually, I did score a goal today, or I'm better at like standing on the beam in gymnastics, or I can play 2 chords on the guitar. Whatever it is, we actually sometimes forget that children need to be reminded of what happened. That's our job as parents, to story it back for them, because then it kind of embeds a little bit more in them and that like helps it to stay going.
What happens then if the child is older? Let's say they're moving into their teenage years and everything is changing in their lives and they have other interests.
Sure.
And something that they've spent years, you know, being really good at and really invested in suddenly is the last thing they want to do. How do you deal with that?
So there's two parts for teens that I think of. One is the autonomy piece. Like, you have to let them choose it. So there's no point. I mean, you're not going to be able to put them in the car to bring them down. If they say no, well, you're stuck at the house saying no. But and the other part for teenagers is they need to self-determine, which means they're not going to take advice from their parent. They're meant to not take advice from you. So it makes sense. Instead of looking at parent to teen, we look at coach to teen. So I was talking to a coach recently. He's a hockey coach, and he had a teenager who wanted to get back. The mom really wanted her teen coming back into the sport. So he texted the teenager and said, you were really good at the penalty shootouts. Would you come down to do a practice session with the younger kids? It got the teen down. And, for them, it was like, maybe she'll stay either linked with the younger kids as a peer coach, or maybe she'll go back to, her actual team. But either way, it's a win, because you're getting back involvement in your sport and your community. And there is that piece about you have to let kids choose their sport. I worked with a lovely kid who's 17, a young man, and he was a great hurler. Oh my gosh, when dad came into the clinic, it was a real concern. Oh, is he depressed? Because he'd stopped in hurling, and the county board wanted him back, the club wanted him back. Oh my gosh, there wasn't anyone who didn't want this kid back on a hurling pitch. And so for this kid, he had competence, like he could really do it. And he had the peer relationships, which is the other thing we'll talk to. But what he didn't have is autonomy. Like, he'd come from this generation of hurlers, and it was kind of
your expected.
It was expected. It was your identity. And then, of course, he was so good at it. Why not keep it going? But actually, he'd never kind of like thought about, who am I if I'm not a hurler? And of course, in teenage years, what we often have is that identity versus identity confusion. Like, that's our psychology crisis. So if your identity is only as a hurler, and then you feel very, confused and kind of going through the processes of who am I, it can be very normal that you'll pull back from that one thing that you feel like you've been shoved into. So he'd had a lot of external motivation. Everyone thought he was fantastic. He'd always been praised, but he hadn't built up an internal motivation. So for me, I think that's the key. But it does always start with external. We do need all those pieces. But an internal motivation looks like, so for example, Claire, if you got player of the match, instead of me going, oh my God, you're amazing, which is going to be my temptation, me as a parent will say, gosh, how does it feel? And, your kid is probably just going to say, good. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what's good about it? Oh, I feel like I've accomplished something. All right, and what's that like for you then? Oh, I don't know, I feel proud. Or maybe you'll get all those words. You'll get something anyways. But if you can do that after each game, what's actually happening, or each training, what's happening for your child is they're developing their own internal dialogue about why I like this sport or this activity. And that helps keep the internal motivation going.
Okay, just by verbalising how they felt about the good times and the bad times.
Exactly.
And what about your hurler? Did he go back?
He didn't go back.
He didn't go back.
He went to drama, actually. A complete switch. And, oh my God, I remember the dad showing me videos. And like, I wouldn't know much about hurling, but I could see this was a really talented kid.
He just didn't want to do it.
And he just didn't want to do it. He felt too pushed into it. And to be fair, what a gorgeous family to like stand back and support him then. And I mean, he did have better costumes in the drama society. And he was a lovely kid. I often wondered, would he ever go back as an adult when he's gotten space? But I do think for those families who have those budding hurlers now, or budding whatever they are now, to really take the time to talk them through it, just to hear their story and build the narrative, that's what helps really kind of embed that sense of this is part of me, but not all of me.
Sounds like when they're younger, we have to sort of lean in.
Yeah.
And then when they're older, we have to stand back a bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
What about over-committing to, which is a slightly different topic, but it's related, over-committing to activities? Because I think we all tend, we made a promise, didn't we, during COVID? Oh, this is great. We're not going to do any of these activities. And then we went straight back into them all.
You are so right. The perk of COVID was all the free play and unstructured activities our kids had. And we saw them thrive in that space. So there is a balance. Like, I often have parents say, oh, I'd love them to do that as well. And I'm like, how many activities is your child already doing? Because the more activities we put in, the more pressure, like they've less time to kind of deflate and relax. So, because every activity has learning and development with it, whereas free play, they have such opportunity for cognitive emotional development. They're still strategizing, who's on in tag and how many can be on this team. And, they've all these gorgeous developmental milestones that get reached when they're not in an established activity. So remember that that's something that's just as key to their development as the structured skill that they're learning in, I don't know, scouts or dance class.
Whatever it might be. Yeah. Claire, thank you so much. Great advice as always. Dr. Claire Crowe, member of the Psychological Society of Ireland.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.